well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. I said yesterday we'd be talking with Toby Leary from the Civil Rights Coalition. We're actually going to push that back until tomorrow. We had a little bit of a scheduling mix-up there, but Toby's going to join us on Wednesday's Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. The good/bad news is that there's still plenty to talk about on the show today. Good news is that it makes it easy to do the program. Bad news is it's not great news to talk about. So this story comes from the New York Daily News. Headline, NYPD cops and anti-gun units still making a disproportionate number of illegal stops, according to a new report. Now, you know, this problem predates the Bruin decision. But in fact, one of the, I think, most powerful friends of the court briefs that was filed in Bruin came from public defenders in New York City talking about the number of stop and frisks that were taking place in the city. And the fact that only like 1% of them turning up illegally possessed firearms, right? Now, again, New York has made gun ownership so culturally taboo and so legally dangerous to try to exercise your Second Amendment rights. They've got such this innate hostility towards gun ownership that, you know, stop and frisk may have sounded like a good idea, right? Michael Bloomberg, back when he was mayor, said, what you got to do is you got to take these, young black kids, throw them up against the wall, pat them down, see if they got guns. That led ultimately to some changes being made in New York. Basically, a court-appointed monitor is supposed to be keeping track of the number of stop and frisks that are taking place and whether or not those are done legally. And this is where the problem lies. According to the New York Daily News, two special NYPD units formed at the start of the Adams administration to counter gun crime continue to make illegal stops of New Yorkers at a rate far above that of regular patrol cops, a new report by the city's $40 million federal monitor concludes. The report, based on 2023 data by the court-appointed independent monitor of the NYPD, found that the so-called neighborhood safety teams and public safety teams, about 1,000 officers in all, made legal stops only 64% and 75% of the time, respectively, compared with 92% by their colleagues in regular patrol units. So, again, I suppose if you're a glass-half-full kind of person, you can say, well, I mean, the majority of the stops were done legally, according to this federal watchdog. However, if you are a civil libertarian, you're probably bothered by the fact that for one of these units, a third of the stops they made were illegal. The other unit, a quarter of the stops that they made were illegal. And even for the regular beat cops, almost 10%, almost 1 in 10 of those stops and frisks were done illegally. That's a problem. Now, it's another problem that the federal monitor found that police supervisors said that just 1% of these stops were unconstitutional. One of the attorneys who oversees the monitoring team says, we're not here to tell the department how it should police, but we are here to tell the department to conduct stops, frisks, and searches constitutionally. If supervisors and commands continue to fail to address unlawful stops, frisks, and searches, if they fail to address undocumented stops, then the department must hold supervisors and commands accountable. If some commands can police lawfully, then the rest can do it too. Now, the New York Daily News doesn't get into why these stops were illegal, but the most common reason is that they lacked probable cause. Again, if you're just walking down the street, police have no reason to suspect you of committing criminal activity. You shouldn't be stopped and patted down and frisked. And I would say it's even worse now that New York theoretically has a shall-as-you-concealed carry system in place. Meaning that legal gun owners lawfully carrying are far more likely to exist, even if they're still not commonplace, far more likely to exist in New York City than just a couple of years ago. And yet, if the suspected presence of a firearm is enough to initiate a stop, well, then all kinds of lawful gun owners can end up being harassed here by the NYPD. The New York Daily News reports that more than 90% of the people stopped, black or Hispanic. Police in the two special units made a greater percentage of self-initiated stops than patrol, but those types of stops, as opposed to a stop initiated by a 911 call, were more likely to be unconstitutional, which, again, makes sense, right? If there's a 911 call, hey, this person's acting suspicious, hey, I think I saw a gun. Okay, well, again, given that we live in a country where the right to keep your arms is protected by the Constitution, I don't know that the presence of a firearm itself should be deemed a risk or probable cause for a stop. But again, if you're getting that police contact initially coming from another citizen, as opposed to, you know, a cop simply identifying somebody walking down the street and saying, you know what, that person looks suspicious, it does not surprise me that those stops that were initiated based on 911 calls were more likely to be done legally. Now, interestingly, the New York Daily News spoke to the president of the Patrolman Benevolent Association, basically the rank and file officers union, Patrick Hendry. And his response was really interesting. He said that from the very beginning of the stop, question, and frisk case, police officers on the street have been saddled with most of the blame and punishment for a problem that we didn't create. He said the monitor should focus its attention on the NYPD's management and supervisors rather than the police officers who are carrying out their directives. So Hendry doesn't deny that there's a problem. I'm not sure I buy the, well, we're just following orders spiel. But he suggests that if there is a problem, and it sounds like he's acknowledging that there is one, that this is coming from on high. That the policies are the problem, not merely the practices of the officers in these units. City officials are also saying, well, listen, we're doing things differently. Right. We're changing things up. So 2023 data really isn't applicable to what we're doing now. But there are some groups who are concerned that what the city is doing now could make things even worse. Daily News reports that on January 30th, Police Commissioner Jessica Tisch announced a renewed focus on quality of life offenses, which critics say could increase improper police stops. A Legal Aid Society lawyer called the initiative a, quote, pretext to stop and harass New Yorkers who are going about their day. Plaintiff's attorney Sama Sase and Jonathan Moore called the findings, quote, unacceptable, saying if the specialized NYPD units cannot respect the rights of New Yorkers despite additional training and supervision, then they should be disbanded. Donna Lieberman of the New York Civil Liberties Union laying responsibility to the feet of Mayor Eric Adams, calling for the units to be dismantled as well, saying that the mayor has essentially given these units carte blanche to harass and intimidate New Yorkers, and adding, as Trump is pushing to step up stop and frisk across the country, it is even more troubling that our city's leadership is ignoring the hard lessons that we should have learned over decades of use and abuse. Yeah, I will say I'm not a huge fan of stop and frisk. Wasn't a huge fan when Mayor Bloomberg was backing it. Was not a huge fan now that Donald Trump is encouraging it. I think as a practice, it is ineffective at identifying violent criminals. Again, you know, about 1% of these stops lead to the discovery of a firearm, which means the vast majority of people who are stopped, patted down and frisked, weren't doing anything wrong. And it is this sort of police state mentality, right? That, again, I think is the problems are you know, the anti-gun attitudes, I guess, contribute to the problems. Right. And if there was this expectation in New York that, well, you know what, people have the right to keep and bear arms. So the mere suspicion that somebody is carrying a firearm is not cause for concern or cause to believe that a crime is being committed. If that was the attitude, I think things would be a lot better. But unfortunately, the city of New York, state of New York, still views bearing arms as a problem, right? As evidence of suspicious behavior in and of itself. And of course, they have put up so many barriers to entry for people who are trying to exercise their right to carry that, you know, they could reasonably argue that, well, isn't the you know, there are more people illegally carrying guns than legally carrying guns, which is a problem in and of itself, right? And again, the answer isn't more stop and frisk. The answer is making it easier to lawfully exercise your right to keep and bear arms. something that New York City, unfortunately, unwilling to do. All right, let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report from Illinois, Decatur, Illinois. This is the Herald Review newspaper. Drug dealer who opened fire gets probation. Yeah. Illinois, cracking down on lawful gun owners. But when it comes to somebody who, again, not even legally allowed to possess a firearm, and apparently opening fire during a drug deal gone bad, yeah, they're going to get a slap on the wrist. In this particular case, 26-year-old Trayvon Brown Nelson, who's accused of firing his gun, a legally possessed firearm, again, during a drug deal gone bad in December of 2023. Trayvon Brown Nelson was scheduled to go to trial here in a few weeks, but back on January the 9th, he appeared in Macon County Circuit Court and told Judge Jeffrey Geisler that he was ready to take a plea deal that had been negotiated by his attorney. And it is a heck of a plea deal. He admitted to the reckless discharge of a firearm, and in exchange, the judge dismissed charges that Brown Nelson was an armed habitual criminal. Also dismissed charges that Brown Nelson was a felon in possession of a firearm at the time. And instead of being sentenced to prison, 26-year-old Trayvon Brown Nelson was sentenced to 24 months of probation. That was it. Now, according to police investigators, there were reports of multiple gunshots in the area of 100 block of Caden Drive back on December 13th of 2023. They spotted a vehicle, or at least eyewitnesses spotted a vehicle fleeing the area at a high rate of speed, pulled into the driveway of a nearby home. Police traced that vehicle to Trayvon Brown Nelson. They found 17 casings dumped over the ground near the house that Brown Nelson had apparently fled to. When they searched the home itself, they found a 45 caliber pistol that had been reported stolen. It had a magazine that is illegal in Illinois, with the capacity to hold 26 rounds. 7 rounds left in the magazine, 1 in the chamber. Officer Lucas Bray said the markings on the spent shell casings matched the live rounds. Brown Nelson admitted that the gun was his, but he told police he didn't fire it, and he said he didn't know that it was stolen. He said that he had gone to a nearby apartment to sell a couple of ounces of weed, but the buyer pulled a gun and robbed Brown Nelson of his drugs. He said that the subject then began shooting at him while running to a vehicle parked out front, but he told police that he didn't shoot at anybody during the incident. Now, of course, he's admitted that he did discharge his gun in exchange for having the more serious charges dropped. You know, and I was thinking about this, I was like, all right, well, were there extenuating circumstances here? Trayvon Brown Nelson was a convicted felon, but maybe it was, you know, a nonviolent possessory drug offense. Maybe that's why the judge agreed to this. No. According to the Herald Review newspaper, 26-year-old Trayvon Brown Nelson has 9 previous felony convictions. 9. More than 1 for every year of his adult life. 8 previous convictions for robbery. 1 previous conviction for kidnapping. Which begs the question, why was Trayvon Brown Nelson even out on the streets in December of 2023 when he should have been in prison on, I don't know, one of the robbery charges, the kidnapping charge? But again, all of that criminal history disregarded by the judge who accepted this plea deal. And instead of going to prison, Trayvon Brown Nelson will spend the next 2 years on probation. That is it. A sweetheart deal and a slap on the wrist for a violent career criminal. Today's Armed Citizen story, also involving some violent criminals. I don't know if they're career criminals, pretty young, but they apparently are starting off on the wrong path here. From Albuquerque, New Mexico, 7 teenagers arrested in a deadly attempted robbery and shooting. One of the would-be robbery suspects was shot and killed by their intended victim. This happened last Wednesday morning. It's about 3 a.m. A group of teenagers tried to rob a couple as a couple drove into the Ridge apartment complex. The teens were in a white car. They drove up to the husband and wife who were in a blue Jeep. The victim said that one of the teenagers, later identified as 14-year-old Alonzo Sanderson, pulled out two guns, aimed them at the passenger side of the vehicle. Then police say 15-year-old Jariah Salas got into the back seat of the Jeep, also armed with a gun. At some point, authorities say a shot rang out, and then there was a shootout that erupted between the husband in the Jeep and the armed teens. Sanderson was struck. The driver's wife was struck as well. One of the other teens outside of the Jeep then tried to jump into the Jeep and fight the driver, but he was able to push her out and then rammed into the teen's car before driving off. When he realized that his wife had been shot twice, he took her to the hospital. Thankfully, her injuries were non-life-threatening. She was later released. Anderson was also driven to the hospital by some of his teenage accomplices. He passed away from his injuries there. The teens told detectives that one of the girls may also have been shot. She had left separately with another teenager. And then the next day, 15-year-old Jania Pinto showed up to a local hospital with a bullet graze wound, taken into custody. 13-year-old Alevis Salas turned himself into police the following day as well. He's now been charged with attempt to commit an armed robbery with a deadly weapon, aggravated battery, assault with a deadly weapon, shooting at a motor vehicle, and conspiracy. Police also arrested 16-year-old Jocelyn Cedillo, 14-year-old Elijah Gutierrez, 15-year-old Jariah Salas, 12-year-old Jonathan Gutierrez, 12-year-old Jonathan Gutierrez, 17-year-old Vicente Pino, 15-year-old Jania Pino, and 13-year-old Levis Salas. Now, again, the driver of the Jeep not facing any charges for acting in self-defense. Thankfully, his wife not seriously injured. But this is a problem here. And you know, Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham has, I think, wisely stopped talking as much about gun control. But let's not forget that one of the reasons why she tried to ban concealed carry in Albuquerque and Bernalillo County was because of a rise in violent crime, often involving juveniles. So rather than making it easier for law-abiding adults to protect themselves, rather than putting the focus on stopping juvenile offenders, what did the governor try to do? She tried to keep people, like the driver of this Jeep, from being able to protect and defend themselves and their loved ones. That was her initial response to violence in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Again, thankfully, the courts have put a stop to most of her prohibitions. But again, that was her first initial gut reaction to violent crime in Albuquerque. Let's make it harder for people to defend themselves against these violent predators of any age. Now, finally today, our good deed of the day in the right place at the right time will enable to do the right thing. More teenagers this time stepping up and displaying some, if not heroism, at least displaying good character. Three teenagers in Ottumwa, Iowa, hailed as heroes after rescuing a man who fell on some train tracks. The teens say, "We didn't think twice." The three teenagers were in class at Gateway High in Ottumwa. That's a alternative school. And they saw a individual just looking out the window, saw a guy struggling to get up after he fell on these train tracks that run directly behind the school. Now, these are active train tracks, by the way. Paul Clannery said, "I felt like he needed help. So I just told these guys to come help me out real quick." The other guys, Clinton Ring, Davison Hartman, they all took off. Ring said, "We went to check it out. We didn't think twice. We just went. We helped them out." As they're running out of the school, they ran past the room where Matt Erlinson, who's a science teacher, was teaching. And he says they yelled out, "Hey, Mr. E, there's a guy on the railroad tracks. We're going to go save him." So he went out and he followed the teens. He said, "By the time I was out there, they were kind of getting to him and helping him off his feet. And then they just started walking into the bus stop." He said, "You know, it was just a selfless act. They didn't wait and ask for permission. They just said, we're doing this." Clannery was asked what people should take away from these three teens helping a complete stranger. And he said, "Be righteous for the people around you." Ring added, "Don't judge a book by its cover." CBS News reports that the teenagers never saw the man that they saved that day after he thanked them for their help. But the act brought these three friends even closer. Hartman said of a Clannery and Ring, "I think they're great people. They help me a lot. They help others too. And I'm thankful for that, for being their friend." Well, again, in the right place at the right time, we'll enable to do the right thing. Help a stranger in need. These are three teens in Ottumwa, Iowa. Clinton Ring, Paul Clannery, Davis and Hartman, we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Again, we'll be talking with Toby Leary from the Civil Rights Coalition in Massachusetts. But be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today, keeping you abreast of all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. And of course, if you like what you see, I would encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. You'll get all kinds of exclusive benefits. You'll also get the warm, fuzzy feeling of supporting the independent pro-Second Amendment journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms, and we really do appreciate your support, so thank you again. Have a great rest of your two-way Tuesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.